The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So today I'd like to talk about mindfulness of the body, primarily. The Buddha talked about mindfulness of the body, and he gave a lot of different instructions on how to pay attention to this body. I'm going to pick one of those ways to explore today and then branch out from it a little bit. So the way that I'd like to talk about the body awareness today, or mindfulness of the body today, is with respect to the base of the body itself, the corporeal nature of the body, and the four elements meditation, which basically is the contemplation on the fact that this body is composed basically of solid stuff, earth, movement, air, heat and coolness, fire, and fluidity, or water. So this is the elements meditation on earth, air, fire, and water. But before I go into that, I'm going to talk a little more generally about some of the benefits of bringing our mindfulness to the body. When we sit down to pay attention to our experience in meditation, we often see that our minds go off into thought. We're off in the past, thinking about things that have happened in the past, wishing things had gone differently, trying to revise the past, or fantasizing about the past, remembering wonderful times we've had on vacations, or we're just kind of lost in that world of things we have done. Or we're lost in the future, planning, fantasizing, thinking about what might happen, what might come to be. Or we're contemplating about the present moment, thinking about what should be happening or shouldn't be happening right now, liking things, not liking things that are happening right now, kind of reacting to present moment experience. So coming into the actual experience of the body, of what's happening in the body, brings us out of that world of thoughts and into the present moment, because the experience of the body is happening here and now. So we can connect to the present moment through connecting with our physicality, the physical experience of the body. So it's a very grounding practice. You know, I often think of the way we're off in our minds as being kind of out in the air, out in space or something. We even talk about being spaced out. And the body is really connected to the earth. The solidity of the body, the bones, the weight, the heaviness, can bring a grounding presence to our minds, to settle it down, to stabilize the mind here and now. So it's a very skillful tool for us in our meditation to learn how to connect with this body. So this is a training. We are so used to living in our minds that when we first come to meditation, often it's kind of challenging to even connect with the experiences of the body. You know, it's not obvious to us. We're so used to ignoring the body and paying attention to what's happening in our thoughts that we have lost touch with the actual feeling in the body. So it can be a thing that takes some time for us to connect with. The obvious sensations on the body have to do with the skin. You know, that's pretty clear to many of us, you know. So just noticing right now, if your hands are touching, that you can feel that contact. You can feel that experience of the pressure of the hands touching, or your feet, wherever your feet are touching. They're touching each other, touching the ground, touching a cushion, touching your body. That contact with the physical skin, the skin sense receptor, is very obvious to us. There's some subtle things about it. So, for instance, we often don't notice the contact of our clothes with the skin. So right now, can you connect with some of those sensations? The feeling of perhaps some binding around your waist. Or the more subtle experience of the weight of cloth against your arms. So we can begin to connect to the touch sensations as a kind of more obvious form of bodily experience. And then there's some other kinds of bodily experiences, and I'm sure there are scientific names for them, but I don't know them. But there's kind of internal sensation in the body. Some of those are similar to the skin, but there's not skin inside the body, so it's a different thing. But there are nerve receptors that feel pain and pleasure inside the body. So we can contact, for instance, you know, when we feel pain, this is most obvious. You know, if we have a stomach ache or, you know, we have gas in our abdomen, we feel the inside of our body. Or we can feel the experience of the heartbeat, the muscle moving. And then there's kind of a proprioception, a sense of the movement and placement of the body. So there's kind of an internal sense of the body that's more subtle than the external. That one is harder to touch into at times. So with respect to the elements, for us, I think, you know, I think perhaps in the time of the Buddha, people were very familiar with thinking in terms of the elements. It was a common way to explore bodily experience, and it was the scientific understanding at the time of what matter was composed of. So, you know, kind of like that scientific understanding of our time around various phenomenon gets kind of ingrained into our understanding. It was probably a familiar thing to the people in the time of the Buddha to think about their body in this way. What's earth? What's air? What's fire? What's water? For us, it's a little more of a conceptual leap. And so the easiest way to contact this kind of experience is to look at the different types of sensation. At least in my experience, the easiest way to contact this type of experience is to look at the different types of sensations that our body feels. So feelings of weight, of heaviness, of solidity, of stiffness, hardness, roughness, smoothness. Those are manifestations of earth. Experiences of heat and coolness are manifestations of the fire element. Experiences of movement which includes experiences such as vibration, tingling, pulsing, lightness, pushing, pulling. Those kinds of experiences are air element. And then experiences of fluidity, cohesion, any place you experience water, that would be the water element. So there's no need to use the concept of earth, air, fire, water in exploring these experiences. Just recognizing the kind of elemental nature that you have in your experience. Recognizing the vibration, the tingling, the heaviness, the lightness, the coolness, all of that. We come into contact with that experience as an elemental experience. And no need to kind of make the leap, oh, heaviness, oh, that's earth. Or stickiness, oh, that's water. No need to kind of make that conceptual leap, because that will just be adding additional layers of thinking. So just coming into the physicality of the body. Now to help kind of get a sense of this for you, I'm going to do a couple of exercises with you. So I'd like you to hold out your hand and put your attention in your hand. What is the experience of the moment? You might notice tingling, pulsing, coolness, stiffness, heaviness or lightness. Just connecting with that experience. What's your experience? What are you noticing on the palm of your hand? What are you noticing in your fingers? The back of your hand? Now I'd like you to create a fist. As tight as you can. And notice that the sensations are now different. What are you noticing now? Hardness, perhaps. Maybe a sense of burning. Pressure. Tension. Stiffness. Pulsing. Pressing. Now I'd like you to not open the hand, but release the tension. And what is the difference now in the experience? Perhaps some throbbing, vibration, stiffness, coolness or heat. And now, as slowly as you can, slowly, 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 begin to open your hand. And notice what you experience now. Maybe some sense of creaking, stiffness, jerkiness. Pressure. If some of you are feeling a stiffness before movement, that feeling of stiffness is the earth element. The quick jerk of movement is air element. So allowing your hand to open quickly, so you can open it. For the last part of this, I'd like you to touch your hands together. Notice the temperature. does the temperature come a little bit more into relief? Even, you know, try touching the back of your hand. Does the temperature come a little bit more into relief as you do this? The coolness or warmth. Perhaps coolness changing to warmth. So you can put your hands down. The second exploration I'd like to do, for this one, I'd like you to close your eyes and put your attention inside your mouth. And allow your tongue to just gently touch the back of your teeth. And see if you can get a sense of the hardness of the bones of your teeth. Moving the tongue a little bit along the teeth, you might get a sense of the smoothness of that bone. And pushing the tongue against that hardness. What does that pushing quality feel like? And contacting the experience of the saliva in your mouth. Noticing the flowing quality. So letting go of that exploration and opening your eyes. I'd like to hear a little bit about what you experienced in those two exercises. What did you notice?
Since I have the microphone under control. I have a question on practice, and it relates also to noting, in that in this experience, you could sense the separate aspects as either separate aspects or compounded.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I tend to go in and out of, there's the gestalt of recognizing and then sort of seeing it as a whole sort of entity, or separating them out into tingling, and being able to just, if I want, just focus on tingling.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what benefit either has. It's, my mind is on the object, on the experience, but it changes from sort of a wide expanse to a more narrow expanse, sort of at will.
Mm-hmm. So it's really, they're both useful as long as you're able to stay mindful. There are different qualities that kind of come into relief when we bring our attention more to the single object. In the wider area, when we're kind of looking at the gestalt, as you put it, we're actually more paying attention to the knowing of, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a broader kind of awareness. So we're kind of backed off of the physicality a little bit. So bringing the attention in to the physicality, we get a little bit clearer sense of how that physicality behaves. Now we can see similar things with the way the awareness works. We can see similar things about the nature of consciousness, the nature of knowing, but it's a more subtle object. So it's easier, in a way, to notice how things change, the kind of the texture of change with the more gross object of the body. I think that's enough for now. I'll stop there for now. Well, it will lead into another topic that I'm gonna talk about. So.
When I made a shift or a movement, it awoke in the actual emotion, or not emotion, but the sense that I was feeling. So if I shifted and allowed my hand to open a little, it would bring on, the movement brought on more feelings of my body, which is... It's true.
You mean in your whole body or just...
No, in
that
space.
Area. Okay,
yes.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't moving except for my hand or my tongue. And each time I shifted, it brought on a different kind of physical feeling.
Yes.
I usually started with one that was kind of dull and but constant. But in order to add to it, I think before I shifted... my hand or my tongue, I still felt other different feelings physical feelings, but I really felt them strongly when things moved.
I think that's a very good observation. You know, when things are still, you know, the mind kind of, I don't know if it loses interest or if it just kind of gets used to those sensations, so it doesn't quite stay as connected in a way. And then when there's movement, there's kind of the obvious new things arising. So the mind kind of perks up at that. It's like, oh, something new to pay attention to. Just one piece I'll add in there is I think that's partly why in the meditation that we encourage you to pay attention to the breathing, because it changes, because there's movement. So it helps to support that mind staying connected. You know, if we try to just settle into the body, initially that can be challenging. It's like, well, I don't feel much changing. But as we get quieter and quieter, we start to sense the kind of just vibratory movement of the kind of molecules or something, you know, the sense of the blood moving or something. There's just a kind of a sense of the aliveness or the energy in the body having a changing quality to it. And then that can become something that the mind kind of can connect with. Again, because it's got that kind of moving quality, the mind is a little more interested in it. So thank you for that comment.
It was very helpful in the beginning when you enumerated, when you went through the four different dimensions, air, water, etc., and you mentioned all kinds of sensations that could go with them. Because when I noticed when I was opening my hand, I was going through and noticing all kinds of sensations I might not have noticed otherwise, because you'd given me ideas, essentially things to think about which I'd never noticed before. On the other hand, I also realized that I really didn't care, and I wasn't trying to link them up the correct way with the basic four dimensions. Something you said was air, I thought was water, and I said, who cares?
Yeah, don't worry about that part. Yeah, absolutely don't worry about that part. one thing that you're pointing to here is that part of the reason I do this is that we don't really have that sensitivity to all those different sensations. But as soon as somebody points to them, it's like, oh yeah, I feel that. So what we're doing here partly is beginning to learn what I call the language of the body. You know, the ways that it communicates with us through these sensations. So getting familiar with those over time, they become more and more obvious. So it does take some time, but yeah, thank you for that comment. Anyone else? Okay, I'll move on. So now I'm going to take a little bit of a left turn here and move into another dimension. So beginning to get familiar with the body, as we get familiar with the sense of the body, it begins to support a recognition or a distinction between physical experience and mental experience. As we can get really familiar with what is bodily experience, we can then become much more attuned to what aspects of our experience are actually mental. Now, we conflate these two a lot. We kind of mistakenly assign mental experience as physical experience. And I'm going to go through some of the ways that that happens, starting from the more obvious down to some of the most subtle, so that to kind of point to this distinction between mind and body. And first I'll say a little bit about why this might be helpful. The exploration of the body itself begins to support the recognition that the body is composed of these elements and processes around these elements. In fact, in the Satipatthana Sutta, there's an analogy. It's kind of a striking analogy for this elements meditation. So after the Buddha has described the four elements meditation, which is one line, you know, it's really not very much, he says. A practitioner reviews this same body, however it is placed, however disposed, as consisting of elements thus. In this body there are the earth element, the water element, the fire element, and the air element. So that's his instruction. It's pretty minimal. Then he gives an analogy. Just as though a skilled butcher or his apprentice had killed a cow and was seated at a crossroads with it cut up into pieces, so too a practitioner reviews the same body as consisting of the elements. Now, that analogy may seem kind of counterintuitive, or like, what does it have to do with anything? But in the commentaries for this, it explains a little bit more about what he's pointing to here. It says that a butcher with his cow, when he's taking the cow into the stable or feeding it, moving it from one place to another, the butcher thinks of that as a cow. And then when the butcher kills the cow and cuts it up into pieces, he stops thinking of it as cow and starts thinking of it as meat. So it changes the perception of the experience from one, it makes it it changes the perception from that of a being to parts, to parts of a body. And so likewise it says that while we see our body kind of without breaking it down into these parts, we are looking at ourselves as a self, as a being that does things and moves and acts and intends. And we don't see the... We are fooled into believing the truth of that. We're fooled into believing the reality that we exist as an abiding entity, as opposed to a series of processes just flowing on and on. So this meditation, it said, begins to support the understanding of the body as composed of parts, so that we get are less attached or less confused about this body as belonging to me or being me. So this movement to distinguishing mental and physical goes along that same way, that as we begin to recognize the body and the mind as separate processes that interact, we start seeing how they impact each other, how causes in the body relate to effects in the mind, how causes in the mind relate to effects in the body. As we start to see that distinction, it becomes more and more clear the process nature of our experience, which begins to undercut the misperception that I am a being doing things, acting on things, intending things. So that's part of the reason or the helpfulness in terms of beginning to distinguish between the mind and the body. So, to start with some of the most obvious things, distinctions between mind and body, there is, you know, physical experience, and often we have reactions to our physical experience. If something is painful, we get aversive and reactive to it. We hate it. We want to get rid of it. That process of reactivity is a mental process. Now, that's pretty obvious. I hope that's pretty obvious to you, that the reactivity part is not happening in the body, it's happening in our minds. Likewise with pleasant sensations, sometimes we can start to really want something to continue or want to hold on to something. This wanting can be a kind of a subtler feeling, that the aversive movement is usually more obvious to us than the wanting something to continue. A little bit underneath that kind of gross reactivity, which kind of erupts into emotional responses of anger, hatred, irritation, annoyance, underneath that is a subtler movement of mind in response to experiences in the body of liking and not liking. That liking and not liking is kind of the first step of reactivity. And it's pretty subtle. It can be more subtle. We very quickly actually move over the liking and not liking into hating or wanting to hold on to. In the liking and not liking, the mind can be a little more balanced around, yeah, I like this, but it's okay if it goes away. Or, yeah, I don't like this, but, you know, if it continues, I can handle it. So there's a little bit of a subtler kind of mental experience of liking and not liking. Again, this, I hope, is pretty clear to you that liking and not liking is a mental experience, not a physical experience. Is that obvious to you? Is that clear? Go ahead.
I'm actually slightly confused by this because, depending on the situation, I mean, to put it very bluntly, if I get my hand close to a fire, I'm going to have a physical reaction before I have a mental reaction. I'm going to pull my hand away first. Likewise, if something, I'm trying to think of an analogy in the or a positive direction. You know, if my body is low on blood sugar and I have some sugar, my reaction is going to be physical before it's mental.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a going back and forth between. It's not always starting from the mental point of view.
Oh, no, it's not always starting from the mental point of view. I mean, like you say, you know, there is, I think it comes from the spinal cord, that reaction to jerk back from pain. But you actually, you know, I find when I do that kind of thing, it's like I don't even feel the pain. It's like the mind hasn't even contacted the pain when the body is jerking back. And then, like, 2 seconds later, I feel the pain. So, yeah, I mean, that's not a mental reaction. That's a physical response, kind of an automatic bodily response. So I'm talking about basically the contact with experience as pleasant or unpleasant and the mind's response to it. That movement back has happened before you've even felt pleasant or unpleasant. That is a physical response. Then there is a subtler level of mental experience, and this one can get confusing. This is where it really begins to get into the blurry zone around mental and physical. That the experience of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral, that experience is mental, not physical. That's the understanding in the Buddhist psychology, that the experience when something contacts the skin and we experience it as pleasant, that is a construct of the mind that it's experienced as pleasant. If we experience it as unpleasant, that is also a construct of the mind. Now, let me give you a little bit of an example or an analogy around this to help you perhaps touch into how this works or to perhaps have you see that this is a mental as opposed to a physical experience. So in one retreat that I was on, I was tuning into this quality of pleasant and unpleasant, and I was having a meal, and when the meal was a very simple little meal. I had an apple and some bean dip. That was all that I had. And when I took the first bite of the apple, the experience was extremely pleasant. It created, you know, kind of a whole rippling effect through the body of pleasant experience. And then I had some bean dip, and the tartness of the bean dip, or the kind of the creamy texture of the bean dip and the flavors of the bean dip, when I next took a bite of apple, the flavors were even more intense, so that there was a kind of a strengthening of that. And I noticed that as I ate the apple further, that the sensations were not quite as pleasant as time went on. And then when I took bean dip, the sensations became more pleasant because of the contrast. So the pleasant-unpleasant quality had to do partly with the conditions of having perhaps eaten for a while, gotten used to the flavors, having had a different flavor in the mouth first. So there were some different things coming together to create that pleasant quality. So that pleasantness was experienced both in the body and in the mind, but the understanding is that it is a mental construction. Another way to look at this is to recognize that, you know, to see, you know, the pleasantness and unpleasantness of experience isn't about the thing that we think of as pleasant or unpleasant. For instance, you have two buckets of water, one cold, one hot. And then you've got your hands in those two buckets of water. And then if you put your hands in a neutral bucket of water, it feels different. It's got a different quality. It may have a different feeling tone. It may be pleasant to one hand, unpleasant to the other hand. Same water, different experience. So the same experience for one person may be pleasant at times, unpleasant at times. The same experience for two different people might be pleasant or unpleasant. So there's this understanding that the pleasant, unpleasant, neutral quality of experience is experienced through the mind. So that one takes some exploration, takes some recognition. It's not so important to necessarily try to see this as a mental experience for the physical sensations, but just to reflect on it, to reflect that this is a mental experience. So that's kind of from gross to subtle, some of the physical mental distinctions. And then there's another place of the intertwining between physical and mental experience. So we have the body with some kind of experience, pain perhaps. This experience that I'm going to describe, I've seen this happen with pain. So I have a pain, for instance, in my shoulder. I had a frozen shoulder for a while, and this became really clear to me that, you know, there's the pain in that area of the body. And then there was almost like this, it felt like the whole body system had kind of gotten, what's the right word? Kind of sensitive, made very sensitive. So it was like the pain in this area of the body made the whole rest of the body feel really kind of hyper, a little bit kind of hyper. Almost a feeling of bracing, just this kind of pushing out feeling. And I thought that was physical response to physical phenomenon. As I further and further explored this, I really saw clearly in my own mind that the bracing feeling through the whole body was a response to a very subtle holding in the mind. The mind had this kind of a sense of hold things still, make sure these things don't move. When that mental release, that mental quality released, the rest, the whole body felt like it had been freed up from that bracing. There's still the pain in the shoulder, but the rest of the body lost that kind of edgy quality. It was very clear mental impact on the physical body. So a kind of clear link, body to mind to body. This was quite a revelation to me, actually, the subtlety of the mind body connection. It was very clear and quite it was really helpful to see that, because the whole body had kind of gotten overcharged. It was like something under the skin had gotten irritated. And when I could recognize the mind's contribution to that and relax it, there was much less suffering around the experience of the frozen shoulder. Then there's some even more subtle mental physical distinctions. Again, ones that get confused for us, that we mistake for physical, or that we don't even consider as mental. And that's, for instance, perception of body parts. So when we did the experiment with the hand, Actually, I forgot to do this part. In that experience of holding out your hand, there's the experiences that you're having, the pressure, the pulsing, the tingling, the tension, the tightness, the stiffness, the coolness, the heat. That's what the experience is. Hand is a concept. It's an idea. It's created in our mind and overlaid on the experience. And actually, that overlay of that concept onto our experience is one of the reasons why it's so hard to touch into the actual sensations. Because that overlay is what we're paying attention to, the idea, hand. You can see this as the mind gets quiet. It takes a quieter mind to actually be able to recognize this perceptual process at work. But that, again, it's a mental experience. It's a mental phenomenon. It's a mental process. We experience something. So, you know, this, you know, touching like this. I can think of this as hand touching, and that's like going from the perceptual experience. Or I can notice the coolness, the hardness, the pressure. When I'm thinking about hand, it can kind of obscure some of those experiences, the subtler experiences. The easiest place to play with this kind of perceptual recognition, I think the most obvious place in our experience, is with hearing. So when you're hearing a car, when you're in meditation, this can be a little bit clearer. There's the sound that comes up, and almost always, almost automatically, there's some perceptual process at work in the mind that identifies that sound as being something. So car. The word car appears in the mind. Or an image of a car driving down the road appears in the mind. Again, this is a mental phenomenon. It's a natural, normal process that happens that is completely necessary for living our lives to be able to recognize things. This recognition process happens in the mind. So, exploring the distinction between mental and physical, this can be a very interesting place to explore this mental-physical distinction. In experiencing the body, you might, in experiencing a pain in the knee, for example, or even with your eyes closed, you can experience this more easily with your eyes closed. With your eyes closed, feeling your hands, you may kind of see a vague image of your hand on your knee. That's the concept. So this kind of exploration, again, begins to tease apart the processes at work in our experience. We see the cause and effect link. We have an experience of a sound hitting our ear, and the mind automatically recognizes it as something. Now, this process of recognition has happened over so many years of our life. You know, from the time we were babies, the first time we heard a car, we didn't know what it was. So, you know, but that, and initially, it's perhaps a slower process of recognition, but it becomes so quick in our minds. And that's useful for us, that it's so quick to have things identified like that. But we mistake the perception for the reality. We mistake the thought in our minds as being the thing, as being something that's actually out there. And all it is a thought in our minds. Now, I'm not saying that there's not something out there. There are some schools of Buddhism that say everything is mind. I actually think there are things out there that we interact with, that we meet, that there is physicality. But there is a huge mistake that we make to assign reality to the concepts that come up in our mind. The perceptual process is prone to error, as I'm sure most of you have seen. So I have a few more ways to look at physical mental distinction, but I want to make sure there's some time to talk. So there's about 8 minutes. Let's open it up for, yeah.
It sounds almost as if you're saying the perception is illusion, not reality, but that the actual experience, the feeling, is reality. You're not saying that, I don't think.
I'm not quite saying that. I'm saying that we confuse the perception for being the thing out there, so that there's that misunderstanding of the perception. The perceptual process itself is also reality. And the fact that there is an experience arising in the mind, it can be recognized as an experience arising in the mind. Just as we can recognize experience arising in the body as a process happening that is reality, experiences that arise in the mind are also processes that are happening that are reality. But we mistake those processes for being something other than they are. So the process of perception happening, you know, it's like the car goes by, we see an image of a car. We can recognize all that happening, still know it's a car, and recognize that that is a perception that's happening, not a thing. This supports the ability of our mind to let go of holding on to things. Because what we ultimately see, actually, as we really start to look at how our mind clings to things, you know, what is it that we cling to? What is it that we hold on to that we want to be here? We think we cling to relationships, you know, that person. We think we're clinging, you know, it's like, I have to have that person. And there's a sense that what we're clinging to is something out in the world. But what we're actually clinging to is an idea in the mind that we have about that person. We have a whole, I mean, that's a complicated example, you know, a whole a whole story about that person and what they're doing for us and all of that, and that's what we're clinging to. So really beginning to see this distinction between what is arising in the mind as just something arising in the mind really begins to support that letting go.
Thank you. This one's on. I understand greed and aversion, and the three things, you know, greed, aversion, and illusion.
Delusion.
Oh, that gives it a little. I thought it was illusion. It's delusion.
Delusion.
So I'm wondering if I become more aware of my desire and my aversion, that the delusion will diminish a bit. Is that, I mean, it seems like delusion is an outcome of these two things.
It's actually the other way around, that delusion is the root issue, and greed and aversion arise out of delusion. This is a longer topic. I could talk about this next week. That would be a great topic for next week. I could talk about delusion next week in great detail. Why don't I do that?
That's great. Already it's helped me.
Anyone else have a question?
It's nice to have you back.
Oh, thank you. It's nice to be back. Well, I've got 3 minutes. Do you want me to go into the next? I'll talk about one last one. The subtlest, one of the subtlest distinctions between mind and body, that this is really, it gets much harder to see, is the knowing of experience. So every experience in our mind-body process comes together with the thing that's known and the knowing of it. So with the physical world, there's the physical contact with the physical sense base, and then there is the knowing of that. So these two things come up together. And then there's also, you know, at the eye, you know, there's the sight, and then there is the eye, and then there's the contact of that sight with the eye, and then there's the knowing, the recognition of the sight. Hearing is the same, smelling the same, tasting the same. The contact with the physical base, and then the recognition in the mind that something has happened. These are very hard to tease apart. So it's kind of just beginning to explore in your physical experience what is the contact and what is the knowing. And it's like you can't really separate them because they come up together. But there's a way that we can kind of be a little more attuned to the physical side, or we can be a little more attuned to the knowing side, so that you can recognize the mind's contribution to this process and the body's contribution to this process. They can't really be separated to look at them separately because they arise together. So at times, as the mind gets quieter and quieter in meditation, there's kind of a natural way, having heard that there is there's the experience of the physicality and the knowing of it, the mind, like in the example like you commented on, having this pointed out to you, these sensations pointed out to you, you began to be able to experience them. It's kind of a similar thing. Having had it pointed out that there is the physical and the mental qualities of knowing, the mind can begin to recognize that distinction. It's not something to try to do. But from time to time, you might recognize that the mind is more attuned to the physical or more attuned to the knowing of it. Okay, well, it's 11, so I thought this might open again. We can talk a little more about this next week, too. Okay, so may you be happy and at ease.